Hey there, this is Seth Juarez with Channel 9 here at .NET Friends talking about all things OSS. We're here with Aaron Stannard.
Yes.
Tell us about the project you work on. It's called Akka.net. What is it?
That's correct.
And how does people get into it?
So Akka.net is a distributed actor framework for .NET. It's a port of the Akka framework from the JVM.
Okay.
So TypeSafe, the same company that invented the Scala programming language and the Play framework for Java, also invented a actor implementation called Akka. And it's modeled off of Erlang's real closely. And so what our project's about is bringing that same platform to the .NET ecosystem.
Got it.
So it's a line-for-line port of Akka to .NET.
Okay, so let's back up a little bit. What is the actor model, and when is a good time to use it? Because I'm a fan of knowing, like, I got my toolbox, when am I going to use my hammer, when am I going to use a screwdriver? What's the actor model, when should we use it?
So the actor model is a concept that was invented in the early 1970s by Carl Hewitt. So 1973, I think, was the original date. And it's a concurrent programming framework. So if you have a problem that needs massive concurrency, and I don't mean on just one machine, I mean across a big network of machines all working together, the actor model is a good solution for doing that. So some examples of that might include building analytics systems where you're measuring lots of events coming in and having to do lots of aggregations or segmentation, you name it. So that's a really common use case. Others are problems that we call like naturally real-time and concurrent. A good example is a social application. You've got multiple human participants on either end of your system all doing things simultaneously. Video games are another example too, multiplayer games. In fact, Blizzard is actually an Akka user.
Oh.
So yeah, so there's a couple of other use cases that are a little bit more edge case. One that's emerging that's really interesting is actually Internet of Things.
Oh, right, because there's so many things you can have out there feeding into this pipeline.
Exactly. So think about it this way. If you have tens of thousands of devices that are all sending streams of data back to a central service somewhere, you need to be able to make sense of that data and turn it into usable information.
Right.
So that's one thing that actor frameworks can help you do, is take all that data and really serialize it and turn it into something that either another piece of software or a human can actually respond to.
Got it. Okay, so how do we get started with Akka?
Well, the first thing you can do to get started with Akka.net is go to learnakka.net. I'll just pull up the URL real quick.
Yeah,
let's go ahead and pull it up. So, learnakka.net. So this redirects to petabridge.com/bootcamp. It's my company. And this is a free self-directed course that has you clone a GitHub repo and teaches you all of the actor fundamentals.
I like that.
So the core idea behind the actor model is using actors as your sort of fundamental unit of programming. So if you think about back when you were first learning how object-oriented programming worked, you might have come from a procedural background where you're used to just writing methods all the time. You didn't really have that good encapsulation that OOP gave you. Actors is sort of a similar idea to that, where every single actor has a single responsibility, and it's able to send and receive messages. And messages are just C# objects. Like, let's take a look at a really simple example, real quick.
So, for just one second. So, the actor is the fundamental unit of things that are happening in this type of model.
Exactly.
Okay.
The only two objects that you really find yourself defining in an actor system is you have, other than stuff that's built into the framework or existing libraries you developed, you write actors and you write messages. So messages are just POCO objects for all intents and purposes. Actors are special objects that inherit from some built-in types built into Akka.net.
Got it.
So yeah, so a quick example. This is from Unit 2 of the Akka.net bootcamp that I just opened up.
Can you zoom into the...
Yeah, I just want to pull up. There's a couple of different actors here. Let's take a look at the before. Okay, this is the performance counter actor. So let me go ahead and zoom in. I'll do like, what, 125?
Sure. Perfect.
All right, there we go. So this inherits from the untyped actor base class. That's the most basic type of actor. We actually recommend using a different one called a receive actor in production. I'll explain why in a little bit. But what this actor's job is, in this particular program, we're having people attending Akka.net bootcamp essentially rebuild resource monitor. So just to show you what this looks like when it's really running, go ahead and start it up real quick. So you can see that we're actually going and graphing our CPU utilization in real time.
Oh, that's cool.
And I can go and turn on, disk utilization and memory if I want to. I can turn CPU off, and I can turn memory off. So you see my disk spikes down here. So this is reactive UI done via actors. And what's really cool is we have one actor responsible for updating this chart, and it actually runs on the user interface thread. And we're able to use a little bit of pub sub to have all these actors that own these performance counters publish updates of those performance counter values to the charting actor at a rate of 4 frames per second. So once every 250 milliseconds.
Wow.
And it's really straightforward to do. The thing that's really elegant about this example, if you're a WPF or a WinForms, like maybe a Windows Phone developer, and you've done a lot of work with multi-threaded code and having to dispatch stuff back to the UI thread, it can be really hairy.
It's really fun.
Yeah, it's gonna be a nasty problem. Well, we solved this by having one actor just configured to run on the UI thread. And actors are phenomenally lazy. They don't do anything unless you're sending them messages. So they don't take up any, there's no inherent overhead from them other than the memory they take up.
Because it feels really fluid. I mean, it's like moving really softly here.
Yeah, exactly. It's very, like, actors are pretty lightweight resources. So one of the things we talked about yesterday here at .NET Fringe during the Akka.NET Bootcamp was that actors are disposable resources. It's in the Erlang philosophy, it's cheaper just to try something by creating an actor and seeing if it dies than it is to try to do all this try, catch, and error handling stuff.
Because then another actor can be spun up.
Yeah, exactly. Or that actor can be restarted in place. It's like a piece of code that can be cleanly rebooted, like a little microprocess, essentially.
Cool.
So going back here, I'll pause, turn this off. Go back to the code sample. So this is one actor that owns one performance counter. So we go ahead and pass in some stuff into its constructor here. And then we have some lifecycle methods. So I call these out here. So actors have a discrete lifecycle where they're either starting, stopping, or they're restarting.
Right.
So I have a couple of little bits of code here where I basically set up a recurring message to publish its metrics to subscribers once every 250 milliseconds. So 4 frames a second per performance counter. Then down here, I do a little, this is where the real magic happens with actors, is in the receive methods. So actors communicate by passing messages to each other. In this case, these message types are just really simple POCO classes. So I can go and take a look at one in a second. But in this case, whenever I get a gather metrics message, that means that it's time to publish that metric to all of our subscribers.
Got it.
And this system is only one subscriber. It's the actor that owns the chart on the user interface thread. And here I have little messages from managing subscriptions. So theoretically, you could take this app and extend it and be able to go and publish metrics to multiple subscribers if you wanted to.
I see.
So we wanted to sort of show Akka.NET users this pattern because it's one pattern that scales really well up to really big distributed systems. Mm-hmm. And it's really trivial to implement. Like our subscribers are managed literally in like a little hash set right here, where we have a set of actor references. And so one of the things that's really key about Akka.NET and actor systems in general is this concept of location transparency. Mm-hmm. And so this sounds like a fancy buzzword, but it's something that we actually use every day in real life. Your cell phone number is an example of location transparency. Every time I want to give you a call or my business partner, you know, we could be on opposite sides of the country, but as long as I know your cell phone number, AT&T can figure out all the physical hops our data needs to take to get across the network. Actor references are the same way. This actor can be running locally in this process, or it could be running on a remote machine in a data center hundreds of miles away. And that's a detail that I don't have to care about as a developer. An actor reference is just an endpoint I can use to start sending messages to another actor.
And so Akka, the framework, takes care of where these things are and how they get the messages.
Exactly. So it's the framework's job to actually go and do what's called deploy an actor, either inside your local process, which is what happens by default, or we can deploy an actor remotely onto another machine, or we can deploy an actor somewhere on a cluster, where these are a bunch of machines that kind of dynamically join or leave a big service.
Got it.
So that all that detail is sort of left out of your set of going concerns as a developer. And that's a really powerful tool that allows you to take code, test it all in a single process when you're developing, and then be able to go and scale it out across multiple machines.
Right.
Now, obviously, it's not as simple as just, you can write an app like it's a single user thing, then magically cloudify it.
Right.
It's not that simple. It's more like you have to still design things in a way where you know they're going to be on the network and have certain consistency and availability requirements, but you don't have to worry about like sending messages to specific addresses or anything like that necessarily. That's the distinction.
Perfect.
Yes.
Well, this is fantastic.
Yeah, so let's take a look at a message real quick. Sometimes people get confused as to like, well, is a message really like some special Akka.NET thing? And the answer is no. Like, here's the subscribe. Here, let me zoom in on this too. 125. All right, so this is a pub sub message here. So I'm basically saying, what type of counter do I want to subscribe to? It's a little enum I created. Mm-hmm. And here's the actor that's going to subscribe. So this allows this, when the actor receives this message, it goes and inspects the type. And optionally, in some other cases, you might want to even spec the content of a message to figure out how you want to handle it. And then you can either respond by sending a message or forwarding the message onto another actor or doing nothing at all. There's no requirement to have to send a response back or anything mm-hmm. else. It's totally up to you as the application developer what you want to do.
So in this particular instance, is there's an actor for the chart, and then mm-hmm. there's an actor for each performance counter type.
Yep, and there's a coordinator that sits on top of all the little performance counter actors that's responsible for basically creating them and managing all the performance counter actors.
Because theoretically, one could die, but the yep. coordinator would say, hey, wake up, new one.
Yeah, exactly. One really important trait of actors is that they are organized into family trees. So they're hierarchies, right? Mm-hmm. And the way that supervision works, this is an Akka-specific concept, is that when a child actor dies, its parent gets a notification saying, oops, this child actor threw this unhandled exception, what should we do? And the parent can issue one of three directives. It can say, okay, we're gonna restart the child actor, which means basically rebooting that actor back to its initial state that it right. was in. Or we can tell the actor that to die, basically we're gonna permanently kill it. Or number three, the parent actor can go and escalate to the grandparent and say, I don't know what to do. And so then the grandparent can restart the entire hierarchy of actors below it if it wants.
So you could build some really complex sort of an ontology of actors that together pass messages to each other and know what to do when its children die.
Exactly. And that's the core to like good resiliency inside a distributed system, is this ability to self-heal and recover from failures. The name of TypeSafe's blog is Let It Crash for a reason.
Right.
It's that if you have, you know, rather than trying to do all this complicated logic around trying to get back into some sort of safe state when you encounter an error, let the actor crash and just restart it. And then the supervisory strategy has some built-in threshold for maximum number of restarts per window of time before it decides, like, this actor is in some borked state where it can't do its job no yeah. matter what we do and just kills it.
That's cool.
So you have the ability to configure that, too. That's not like a thing where Akka.net made some decision and you're stuck with it. It's totally extensible.
So where can people go to start with Akka? I know there's getakka.net.
There's the learnakka.net here. Uh-huh. And then we have our official website too, which is getakka.net. So you can go to getakka.net. That is the official website. And then there's learnakka.net, which is what'll run you through our boot camp, where you basically learn all of the actor design fundamentals.
Got it.
So here's what's really cool about Akka.net and the Akka philosophy too, is when you're designing an application to use the actors and the actor system that gets exposed from the framework. The detail of whether or not you're running this actor system in a clustered or networked or just a single process environment, that's really a configuration detail.
Interesting.
You have the ability to go and tune all that stuff via configuration settings. And like inside, I'm gonna pull up one of my samples here. This is a clustered sample that's inside. I've got a public repo that has all this stuff sitting
cool.
in it. Here I'm saying that we're gonna run with, actually let me zoom in. We'll do 125. So I'm specifying here, we're gonna use the cluster actor reference provider. So this is what's responsible for creating and instantiating actors. And so this basically means it's aware of the cluster. And we have some settings down here for what particular role this node is in a cluster. So one of the concepts that people are really turning to Akka.net for and really like big distributed systems that have high availability requirements is microservices.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea behind the microservices pattern is that every single service has its own physical resources that are isolated from everyone else. So in the event that one service goes down, it doesn't affect the others.
Got it.
You can also deploy and update services independently of each other. It's part of the-
Which sounds very actor-esque.
It is. It is very actor-esque. So roles are a way of distinguishing the capabilities of different services that are participating in an actor system. So you can send messages back and forth between totally different processes running different code. As long as you have a shared library of messages
mm-hmm.
that defines what either end the sender and the receiver should be using, then you're okay. And we transparently serialize all that for you over the network. We use TCP sockets and Google protocol buffers under the hood. So nice. It's very good performance. And then, you know, the thing that's cool about it is once you actually are able to join a cluster here, you can specify specific actors. We have these types of actors in Akka.net called routers. Think of them as built-in actors that have extremely high throughput and they're optimized for just delivering raw messages. Mm-hmm. They don't actually do anything when they receive a message. They just forward it on to a recipient. And that's an actor you wrote yourself.
Okay.
And so we have the ability to define a clustered router here, which basically says every time a new node of role crawler, so there's in this little example here, we have three different types of roles. We have Lighthouse, which is a dedicated node whose only job is to help everyone else figure out where everyone else is. Mm-hmm. That's done automatically through Akka cluster. You don't have to write any code for that. And then we have a crawler, which is our little web crawler. This goes and parses the web and does a lot of, uses the HTML agility pack to go and discover new links and images and downloads them. Mm-hmm. And then we have the web front end. This little router here gets built into the web front end and allows it to go and automatically deploy new endpoints onto the crawler router so it can start distributing messages back and forth Wow. to those systems. So maybe I'll do a little demo of this actually. Yeah. This is a clustered example here. So we're going to go ahead and spin up Lighthouse. So this is another open source project. This is designed to be used inside like Azure Pass or Amazon Elastic Beanstalk, any Pass environment where you want to run an actor system. This is designed to run on like infrastructure as a service. So any of those new nodes that get spun up through, you know, auto scaling or just dynamic deployments can always go and talk to this seed node and figure out how to communicate with everyone else in their deployment group.
Got it.
So Lighthouse is now up. We can see that. Great. Now I'm going to go ahead and fire up the web crawler here. So, all right. So this spins up one Windows service and one web app. So I'm going to go ahead and space these out here. So, let's see. All right. Looks like it's starting remoting. Just going to try to connect to Lighthouse here. So we should see that come up in a second. There we go. So the web crawler is now up. And the little web application here should spin up in a second too. Although it's running a little slow today. That's okay, that's sort of an intermittent failure here. Mm-hmm. Looks like it had some trouble joining the web role. So let's go ahead and see. All right, so this looks like it's up now. Let's go ahead and try to crawl. Let's see, what's the full URL for MSDN?
MSDN.microsoft.com, I think.
All right, MSDN.microsoft.com, great. MSDN.microsoft.com. All right. Okay, so it was able to go and send this message to my little web crawler instance, mm-hmm. and the job should start momentarily. So, yeah, we should see some messages go through. Although my machine's been running really slowly for the past couple of hours, actually.
So what's happening is the crawler is saying to the other service in Lighthouse, I need you to go crawl this website.
Mm-hmm.
And the website is effectively done with its work. And it can now start responding to more requests, mm-hmm. whereas the work is happening in the other place.
Yeah, and if I spin up another crawler instance, it can actually start participating in this job. I think we have a slow internet connection here, right. which is why it's taking a little while.
Yeah, but we see stuff happening.
But you can see it happening. And here's the really cool part. So I talked about location transparency. Mm-hmm. So I'm using SignalR to go and write this output on screen here. But the input, what's being sent over the wire, is coming from the Windows service, which has no idea that it's writing to SignalR. So I go and pull up this actor inside my web app. Let's grab it. It's the SignalR actor here. Let me expand that real quick. So this little SignalR actor, you can see, wraps this thing called a crawl hub that mm-hmm. it resolves. And it's able to get messages. So this job status update message gets published to the hub. And that's what's updating the user interface here.
Cool.
What's really cool is that this actor reference that gets created when I create an instance of the SignalR actor gets passed directly to my web crawler and it writes to that. So effectively, the little Windows service is writing directly to SignalR without even knowing that's what it's doing.
That's way cool.
And that's the value of location transparency, is I can go and swap in any input I want to go mm-hmm. and do that. So actor systems inherently really lend themselves to refactoring because they're so loosely coupled, right? So that's one of the things that we sort of spent some time training people on yesterday here at .NET Fringe. And all the feedback we've gotten was that, one, we hurt people's brains,
right.
but two, that that this was a really powerful idea.
So here's the crazy part. Like, you literally went into the Erlang Akka project and transpose that somehow to C-sharp. Erlang's like a crazy language. Was it a difficult process to do?
Yeah, understanding, so it was a little bit easier since like the JVM is a lot closer to the CLR right. in a lot of ways. The real hard work was done originally by the TypeSafe folks over in Sweden. But what was hard was being able to go and port all of the Scala code to C-sharp in ways that were idiomatic to C-sharp.
I see.
Because Scala has a bunch of language features, like pattern matching, for instance, that we have in F-sharp. We don't have anything really like that in C-sharp yet. Maybe C-sharp 6 will have it. I think
So it was written in Scala originally, not Erlang?
Written in Scala. Okay. So the original OTP was written in Erlang originally.
Okay.
And that was sort of the initial model for being able to go and do real production-grade actors. And those ideas got incorporated into Akka, which is all written in Scala. And learning how all the different, Scala has like 90 different little, maybe more than that, like ternary and binary operators. So figuring out that syntax was a little difficult, but we got there eventually. And we have a pretty good sort of framework and setup now.
Got it.
For being able to go and do all of this in C#.
Well, this is really cool stuff. Thanks for spending some time with me. Go to getakka.net to take a look. Thanks for watching, and we will see you next time.
All right. Thank you very much.